Dear God, I hear about your reckless love, a love that will take my sins and drop it in the deepest ocean, a love that will forgive me when I can't even forgive myself. I try to understand your love for me and why you care so much. In the middle of all my storms, you have been so good to me. You have always pulled me through and survived one more day. Dear God, I ask why. As the bullets rained and the explosions rattled my soul, you protected me. As the depression and anxiety got the best of me, you didn't allow me to kill the light inside of me. Dear God, thank you for never giving up on me. Thank you for never allowing the darkness to consume me. Thank you for seeing the person inside crying for a better tomorrow. Thank you for allowing me to better understand the gift you have provided me, the gift of understanding the reasons you allowed me to live. I thank you for giving me the gift of children to better understand the love you have for me.
Yes.
Dear God, thank you for being the rock I stood on when I didn't even know you were there. Dear God, thank you.
This is my favorite one.
So,
out of all of them, oh my goodness.
So, the reason I wrote that poem, I was at church one time, and I remember that I was seeing everybody just worship and having their hands raised and crying and everything, and just so many emotions just pouring out of them. And here I am, a shell of a person trying to identify what they are feeling because they haven't seen this man. They haven't seen this person that we called God, or they haven't seen him, but here they are raising their hands and loving this man they've never met. And here I have a beautiful family next to me, and I can't love them the way they should be loved.
Wow.
So I could never understand this love of a person that nobody has truly seen. But after going through everything that I have gone through and seeing that the path might be hard, and I think Jordan Peterson said this, we are born to climb hills. As much as we think that the darkness and the pain that we're going is overwhelming and it's too much, that's what we're born for. That's what we are made for. At the end of that hill, you will see what that road took you to and what battles made you a harder person to bring down. But I wrote that because I just truly did not understand the love that he had for me. But now going through the storm, I see it. That's why.
So, Tom, you're a pastor at Mission Church down here in San Antonio. And we, if anybody knows anything about San Antonio, we live in a very blended, like multicultural kind of melting pot of places.
Yep.
Yeah. And people come all over the world to come to San Antonio. And, you were talking before we hit record about the type of people that go to your church and the environment that you're faced with. And I think we talk about this a lot on the podcast on kind of like Southside. No one talks about Southside. We have this kind of dynamic going on where things start to get heated and it almost looks like a battlefield. And you're dealing with some dangerous people, but also on the other spectrum to be fair, cops, right? Fire department and these, what am I trying to say?
I do not know.
What am I trying to say?
I think what you're trying to say is just the battlefield between good and evil. And I think your ministry and you ministering to these people, you have seen that battle constantly. So can you tell us a little bit about that?
So I'm a white kid from the deep south.
Yeah.
Dirty south. My father was a pastor. He preached in a robe.
Sat
in pews. We had to wear uncomfortable clothing, stained glass, which I love, by the way. Choir up in the behind him. And he's a good man. He had come from a hard background, been heavily abused.
Yeah.
Nobody talked about it then. Counseling was anathema in the 60s, 70s, and 80s.
Oh, man.
Especially in the South.
No, nobody,
you only go to counseling if you have to, and then you stop as soon as you can.
Yeah.
And so I would see my father struggle with anxiety, suicidal ideations. I would see my mother who just wanted it to be nice because she'd come from a rough background too. They didn't know how to identify it. And so there I was seeing pain an issue at home. But when we left the house, he had to be good, 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 good. And so my dad's sexual sin came out when I was 19. And it wasn't heterosexual sin, it was homosexual sin. Mm. Where the hell do you put that in 1987?
Nowhere.
Yeah. Oh, man. Your dad looks like Magnum P.I. He's not feminine. And yet he's done these things which are contrary to a covenant marriage.
Yeah.
And so at that time, it was like I said a prayer of salvation when I was six, which, by the way, we don't see that in the Bible anywhere. We don't. There's no like, you say this prayer and then you're saved. And this is what people are told. And that is religion. And so I remember thinking, my father gets removed. It was like, this was me. Here's my dad. Here's God.
Yeah.
And the conduit got cut out. And so then I was like, okay, well, who am I? So I was a preppy little kid. I'd gone to boarding school. I wore coat and tie 9th, 10th, 11th, 12th grade. I went from having short hair to looking like Eddie Vedder, smoking weed all the time, raising hell, because I was so angry and pissed. I didn't know how to deal with the issues.
Yeah.
So that was 10 years. I started a freight company.
Because you weren't allowed to express yourself as a kid?
No. You're supposed to be good. Don't say damn, cut your hair short, don't wear earrings. That's what gay people do. Yada, yada, yada.
You know what I think is crazy, and I think that's the downfall of religion, is all of these kind of rules that they have against everything. It's like, this is how you need to do. No, you can't do that. You have to do this. And I think that's where religion is going wayside. I am a firm believer in God, and I have a big faith in him. But I think once you start going into this, especially when somebody's coming into, and I guess in many ways, I guess it could be a structural thing of trying to structure somebody in the proper way.
Totally right.
But if you have people that you're trying to grab their attention to come to us, come to them, telling them, hey, these are the things that you're not supposed to do. I mean, do you think people are going to do that?
There's a line between trauma and spirituality.
So right. True.
And I feel like when you have trauma, religion sounds terrible because you feel trapped.
Yes.
And I know I had a problem with this.
Yeah.
Like huge, huge problem. I had struggled many, many, many years and I still struggle sometimes. But it was the trauma that you go through is so unbelievably like trapping and painful and rules upon rules in your own mind and reality is kind of distorted and not kind of like seriously distorted. And you really don't know what's up. And I think you just look for the truth. You just want the truth. Yes. You just want and the that, truth.
That's exactly what we're talking about. He has it perfect about lies destroy truth.
Lies murder truth.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Murder. And I was murdering. So my deal was I'd had a porn problem since I was six. Because I saw porn the first time at a deacon's house from our church.
Yeah.
Because my buddy was like, you want to come see what my dad has in the basement? Yeah, I'm 12. And I'd already seen some images.
And that creates an association.
Yeah, totally. 100%.
At a young age that we don't even notice until we're older. No. And now we have all these issues as adults. And we're like, well, where does this come from? How do we remember at six years old?
27 years of it with an addiction. And so that was a shame. But on Sunday, I'm singing hymns and being nice and not using bad language. And then I had this split life that happens always under the umbrella of religion. And so what the church does with people in trauma, they're like, okay, we understand you had a bad situation. You got abused as a child. You've been on the battlefield, but it's time to be better now. And they look and go, what the hell are you talking about? Like, this is deep.
Yeah.
And so religion will always band-aid trauma. The gospel, man, who Jesus was, who he hung out with, he spent time with them. He created a community. And that's the prescription that we're talking about today. So
and he was real. If you've ever read the Gospels, the four Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, it's so funny because like Jesus is like talking and it's super real. It's super direct. It's super in your face. Like, oh, ye of little faith. Like, what are you talking about? Like, Wake up.
You went King James on me there, sister. That's nice. Well, look at who he hung out with. Two dudes were called Sons of Thunder. You know why?
Why?
Because they like to fight. Okay? Matthew is a tax collector. What tax collectors were in that day was not a glorified CPA. It was a racket that you bought from the Romans so you could extort people. Wow. He's a freaking gangster. And Jesus brings him to a saving knowledge. One day he literally passes him at the table and says, come with me. And then he goes home with him and says, you call all your dirty friends. We're going to party tonight. And it pissed the legalistic religious people off. Why? Because you're supposed to be better. And Jesus is like, no, I'm going to go where the broken people are.
Wow.
Right. I'm going to go where the broken people. And that was truth. So Antonio, you and I were talking earlier that what we hear all the time, what religion tells you is be good, be better, be right, and don't have problems.
I'll go further. And some of it, it's like, well, you did something wrong. Like I grew up in a culture where religion was everything. Religion is how you breathed, how you...
You're from Utah, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
You can only imagine which religion we're talking about.
Yeah.
But it wasn't the religion itself that I had an issue with. It was the people. It was the people who would show up every single Sunday with a fake face and go home and beat their wives.
Yeah.
It was that religion where you would show up and the people that you thought that you knew were completely different people behind closed doors.
Yes.
And I feel like there was a few angels that I had with me, and they're still my family to this day. Going on almost 30 years now.
Yeah.
But there's that pressure from society of these ideologies that get into there that are just, it's trauma based. It's fear based.
Yes.
And fear is not a spirit of God.
No. He's come. He actually says he's come to give us in the Greek dynamos, which is dynamite. That's the kind of truth he wants to give us. It blows up all the lies. So what legalism does, what fear does, is quiets you. Be quiet. You're not valuable. Nobody wants to hear you. Go ahead and put the gun in your mouth. Nobody gives a crap. Those are lies, and they murder. They murder. What truth does, it's like planting flowers. It's like planting a beautiful tree. It goes deep, and it grows big, and it changes everything. So Antonio and I were talking. You have three daughters. Yeah. I have three daughters.
Sir.
I have three kids as well.
Do you really?
Yeah.
Okay, so.
A daughter and two boys.
Kids are life-giving.
Yeah.
Like when they come into, when I go home and see my girls this evening, I don't walk in and go, oh, they're my children again. I go, they're my children.
Yeah.
I mean, you talked about it in the poem today. Yeah. Like kids are life-giving. Solid marriage is life-giving because it's a covenant that God created to glorify himself. Community is life-giving. So what people hear that I deal with, that I coach with and counsel, is they've been told so long that the things they were a part of separates them from ever enjoying other people.
Yeah.
And what the enemy wants to do is isolate, because crazy things happen in isolation. Now, I'm an introvert. I like to be by myself. I really do. But when I'm by myself too long, I begin to warp. I begin to think weird stuff. I wake up at 3 a.m. Yeah. My heart's racing. What do I do? What I need is I need people. I need my wife. I need my children. Mm-hmm. I need the elders that I shepherd Mission Church with. And I need random non-believers that are struggling. I need to be a part of the help process. Mm-hmm. And so how you help with truth is not tell them they need to be something else. Mm-hmm. You care for them where they're at. And the Holy Spirit, I hope I'm not getting too woo-woo for people.
Yeah.
The Holy Spirit will speak to you at the right time to say the right thing. I got one story. I got several, but this one comes to my mind. I'm starting jujitsu in the Valley. I started rolling in McAllen when I was 46. I'm 53 now. First day after just killing it on the mat, I come off the mat and there's like me, the white guy, 18 other Latin Americans in the Valley.
Yeah.
Half of them aren't paying taxes, if you know what I mean. And I'm taking off my gi, and this young lady, her name is, well, I won't say her name. She looks at me and she says, what do you do? Now I could tell by from a mile away that she was a lesbian.
Nah. Okay.
She's like, what do you do? And everybody there gets pulled out of the room. Yeah. And I think, oh crap. Like, I said, I'm a pastor. And then everybody turned around looking at me. And she said, oh, really? I said, yeah. Oh, really? And then she said, how do you feel about homosexuals? She didn't say, what do I think about homosexuality? Yeah. She said, how do you feel about homosexuals? And I thought, soft pitch. I said, I love them. Yeah. I love them. She's like, really? I said, yeah. I love them. She said, really? And she brought her girlfriend that next Sunday. They sat in the back and they held hands and listened to me preach. Now, I'm not for that lifestyle. I'm a biblical guy, but I'm for people.
Yeah.
I'm for people. And it's not my right to point.
Right.
It's my right to love and care. Yes. You know? So they started coming and I would share the gospel with her and talk to her. And she's still a friend. I love her.
You know, that's one thing that you had said, that in isolation.
Yes.
I think a lot of the times when you isolate yourself, you have more of this darkness that can come in and consume you.
Yes.
And tell you all of those lies that you've been fed, that feed you.
Yep.
And that becomes your truth. Yes. And I think when we were talking about this before, sometimes it's very hard for you to distinguish where your truth, what your truth really is, because you've been told this over and over and over and over again. And also you isolate yourself. And by doing that, what you just said, giving this lady the opportunity to not be isolated, not be hidden. Come over here and hear the word.
Yeah.
That in many ways opens that up and it removes that isolation. Yeah. Because if you would have gone the other way and it's like, that's another person who doesn't agree with my lifestyle or doesn't value who the person that I am because that's who they are.
Yeah.
So by doing that, you open the door for them to be able to search out more.
Well, it's a permission to experience truth.
Yeah.
It's not a demand.
Yeah.
You know, you have to do this. I don't have to do anything. How I'm wired, even as a Christian, you tell me I have to do something, I'm not going to do it. You have to get a COVID show. I'm not going to do it now. You have to wear a tie. I'm never going to wear a tie.
Yeah.
You know, so that's the human nature, right?
Yeah.
So the model that I kind of work off of on a spiritual level is a triangle. And it's just, you have light, you have dark, and then you have truth.
Yes.
A lot of people focus on the light and the dark, good, bad, black, white, you know, X or A. And it's just, when you get to that point though, you get so polarized.
Yes.
And you feel like you're bouncing back and forth. You have to integrate it. And the way that you integrate it is with the truth. Yes. And the truth can be very hard to find sometimes because it's like, whose truth? My truth, your truth, our truth,
you're
reality
right.
truth. And I think a lot of the trauma processing has to come from that specific truth. And we go back and forth between the darkness and the light, trying to find an answer. But the answer is where you get it from, what you believe in your purpose. And so for me, that's God, right? So whatever you believe on the light and the darkness, like you have to have some sort of guide through in order to find whatever that purpose is for you.
I love what you just said. So met Antonio 3 years ago.
Yeah.
Okay. To another friend. Here's why I would go to Antonio for any type of workout of the day or how to build my pecs.
Yeah.
Have you ever seen him work out?
Yes.
It's like a madman. Nobody does it.
He
like
tags this me in guy all the does videos it. Too.
Yeah. It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
And so based on what I see, I know you know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
So what the church has is this beautiful opportunity to say, come see what we're about. What churches do all over San Antonio is they're very homogenous. They're all white. They're all black. They're all Filipino. They're all Latin American. None of those churches look like heaven, y'all.
Yeah.
Heaven's going to be everybody. It's going to be rich and poor and dark skin and light skin and bearded and non-bearded and ties and t-shirts. And we're all going to sing praise to the living God.
Yeah.
So when I started looking into Jesus for myself, because when I began to read the Gospels, you mentioned that Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, I saw a man who is of the people. He definitely didn't have blue eyes and 70s rocker hair, right? He looked way more like you than me.
He would have been Mediterranean.
He was, So he was very dark skinned.
Yeah.
He was a carpenter's son. So he had calluses on his hand. He's a blue collar dude.
Yep.
He had brothers and sisters. Mm-hmm. Scripture records, he didn't start his ministry till he was 30. Mm-hmm. But what scripture records and even history records outside of the Bible, that he spoke in a way that had not been heard of. Mm-hmm. He spoke with authority and truth. Mm-hmm. He had the mm-hmm. disciples around him. They were a bunch of boneheads.
I think they were teenagers. I have a theory.
Oh, they were younger for sure. Yeah, they were. Peter was married. The rest of them, we don't know if they were or not. Mm-hmm. But they were freaking, they were just hard-ass guys. That's who they were.
And they were disobedient and questioning. And
yeah, they wanted to fight. They, you know, Peter rebukes Jesus once.
A bunch
they
of
didn't know what they were doing.
Yeah, totally.
They needed a medication counselor is what they needed. And yet you saw Jesus be so patient and caring and calm with them. And then y'all look at the result afterwards. So he goes to the cross. History records outside the Bible. So it's undisputed. He goes to the cross. The cross was such a horrible way to die that on record, when Roman soldiers were told they would be crucified, they would go into shock. Mm-hmm. They would put you on a cross and you would be on there for 5 to 6 days. Okay. Yeah. They would sometimes take the male appendage and nail it to the seat so you couldn't fall over and die.
The medical procedure behind this crucifixion is insane. Like, I watched a documentary on it, and it was like, you're constricted, so your lungs are not filling at all. So you have these half breaths, and it's very painful in your chest.
You asphyxiate yourself finally.
You do. You die of asphyxiation before the infection can get you. And then, so you have 3 days of just infection, your body's raging, like there's pain everywhere. And at one point you go numb, but then that's when the mental stuff happens.
Yeah,
and delusional. The psychosis that happens and that crying out that happens. And it's just the human body is just incredible of what we go through. But I think that the spirit is even more incredible of what we can go through and survive.
Well, MMA guys will tell, Antonio, this is you. Guys that are high-level MMA, jiu-jitsu, workout guys, they'll say that the average person feels like they're tapped at this when really they can go to here.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So we see Jesus, who was fully man, fully God. He was crucified on not a James Avery cross, by the way.
Okay.
It was a T. It was called a tall.
Actually, they were thinking now it's more of an X.
Peter was crucified on that, upside down. Well, but it was... The original crucifixion was just on a pole by itself. Mm. So Romans perfected this art. So this guy who said he was God and fully man went to the cross. He gave up his own life around 3 o'clock. They didn't kill him because he's the creator. Mm. And so he allows, and he's completely naked, by the way. Mm. It wasn't a little loincloth. You're embarrassed and shamed. His mom was there. His brothers and sisters were there. Disciples were there. So the God of the universe chose to do this so that sin could get paid for. Now, if that was all a lie, what we see next is what makes me a believer. Every one of the disciples were martyred, except John, and they tried to boil him in oil.
Mm-hmm.
So if he had not come back to life, who in the world would give their life for him?
Mm.
So that was fact for me to go, okay, this is going to go beyond religion to me. And I began to pray in a way like, Jesus, would you tell me the truth? And that was the big, and that's when I'm in ministry.
And a fact of psychology is that when he came back, he showed himself to several hundred people.
Yes.
Right?
For 40 days.
So that alone, to have everybody have the same hallucination, because he was dead medically, there's no way that, like, because of the...
He pierced his amniotic sac.
And amniotic fluid fell out, which means that he was dead. He was asphyxiated. So if he was dead, which they claim that he was, but he rose, that alone to hundreds of people would be more of a miracle itself, to have everybody have the same vision, delusion, than it would be
to rise. Let me ask you this.
That's crazy, right? Like, the facts are unbelievable. Mm-hmm.
So you have this amazing book, which is a Bible.
Yeah,
you have
66 books.
You have this amazing man that died for our sins.
Yeah.
What do you think is the problem that is faced for church or for religion? What do you think is the problem?
That's a great question. Mm-hmm. So I was raised in very conservative Presbyterian church, right?
Yeah.
when I came to Christ, like I just partied all my 20s, wrecked some cars, should have died several times, flipped a car in Corpus coming off the causeway, should have gone right in the water. Mm-hmm. That's a whole nother story. Could not stop myself from drinking too much, drugs, porn addiction, just emotionally handicapped. Like I was trying to figure out how to get out. Met my wife, Selena, in Houston, drug her down to the valley where my trucking company was. And then I came to Jesus like a year and a half later because we were going to get divorced. Mm. Like we were breaking, dude. And I was like, what in the world? I'm supposed to be a Christian. So I got up my Bible and started reading. And I realized that none of it described me. Pick up your cross and follow me. No, you follow me. Treat others as more important than yourself. No, I'm number one. I'm going to gratify myself. Something happened in like a 6 month period. I don't even know when I came to Christ. I just literally one morning woke up and thought, oh crap, I'm a Christian now. I'm a Christian. I've been raised in a culture and not a calling.
That's exactly it.
I've been raised in a culture, Mormon culture, Baptist culture, Presbyterian culture. They're all lower concepts of what we're trying to be. We're trying to be Jesus followers. Mm. So somebody had said, you know, I just love Jesus. Like you hear people say that in church. And we're newlyweds about a year in. And I thought, man, I don't love him. I've argued for him when I'm high. Mm-hmm. And I know who he is when I'm drunk. Mm-hmm. But knowing who somebody is and following them are two different stories.
Oh, yeah.
And so one day I realized, oh, I've been listening to sermons, reading the Bible, crying almost every day like a baby. And I thought, you know what? I do love this man. He died for me. And scripture said he sits at the right hand of God the Father praying for me right now. He gets me. Jesus was tempted. You don't think there weren't chicks that wanted to sleep with Jesus back in the day?
I'm pretty sure.
The powerful man. You're not thinking you do not want to beat the crap out of some of the religious people? Mm-hmm. He called them out in his sermon. Nobody does that. He's preaching in the temple and they're standing up in the back and he calls them whitewashed walls and calls them snakes.
So let me ask you this though. So what you're saying about the difference between how he lived and how religion has now, do you think if God would come back and look at the way church has been established, you think he would kind of shake his head?
That makes me want to cry to think about that. Because I think what we've done, and this is the concept we're talking about today, that truth gives life. It regenerates your soul. It brings life blood to your brain, to your heart. And lies murder truth. Mm-hmm. And they kill it. What the church is in the process of doing is adding on so many layers of lies that the truth can't be seen. And that's terrifying to me.
And here's the biggest lie. Here's the biggest lie that I have found is that humans haven't really changed much.
No, nothing.
Our behaviors are the same. We deal with the same seven deadly sins. Yep. It just goes back to that. So if you look at historical texts, the Bible, even look at Socrates, right? Like outside of like secular world. We all dealt with the same things going forward, like the same thoughts, the same issues, the same problems. And so if we use this historical reference as a guidepost, because knowing humans, they give you the answers right there. That's why I love the Bible. It's just like, here's the answer. You're dealing with pride, here's the answer.
Yeah.
You know, you're dealing with hurt, here's the answer. But we don't want to hear the truth.
No.
We really want the truth. Or sometimes we're just not ready to hear the truth because we have so much evil inside of us right now. And I call them demon attachments.
Yeah.
In a spiritual sense, right? You have these negative attachments that you picked up over time. And so you have to clear that. And that's where that prayer comes in. That's where I think that meditation in the right sense with God led actually helps.
It's beautiful.
Right? And I think that a lot of other alternative things, and we've talked about this before we hit record, of like alternative medicine, as long as you have a biblical guide post, you know, or at least like truth, just lead by truth.
Yes.
Then that would really help with healing.
Well, it's the anchor. I'll give you another form of healing too, and people don't think about it. It's confession. And repentance is an act of worship. So people that have been told lies all their life, Hey, when you were sexually abused at 7, you asked for it. Mm-hmm. Hey, when you did that thing when you were 12, you're dirty. Nobody has done right. that. I had a SEAL tell me once at a wedding, he had been over for 2 or 3 years. He's such a good dude too. And I started talking to him about Jesus, and his response was, yeah, PT, I hear you. Pastor Tom, I hear you, but the things I've done, God could never forgive me for. Mm-hmm. I hear that a lot from Spec Ops guys. I want to tell you guys what to say to them in the future. That is a very prideful statement. Mm-hmm. Let me tell you why. There's two kinds of pride. One is I'm better than you and I'm awesome. The reverse pride is I'm the worst.
Yeah, I'm not good enough.
And you're not mm-hmm. big enough to love me. And this mm-hmm. is what PTSD people do. Frontliners mm-hmm. do. They've experienced things at such a high level that they reject everybody because they hate what they've done.
Yeah.
And so what we can say, hey, listen, your sin is not greater than God's love. Mm-hmm. You're not that powerful. You know? Yeah. You don't have the capacity to out-sin God's grace.
Right.
You know, and that's the truth.
And that's a hard truth. And so when you were talking about truth, and you know, I think in many ways to people, the truth can be extremely frightening. I mean, yes, they might be searching for
100%,
it and everything like that, but you have an ability to only see or only go to a specific limit.
Yes.
Because you're scared of going past that part right there.
So good.
So when I started going through therapy and everything like that, I didn't want to touch on other subjects. I just wanted to talk about just right here. Just make me better for tomorrow. You know, that's it. But what I was really doing is that I was scared of what the truth really showed. How broken I truly was.
Right on the
And mind. How many levels of that brokenness there was.
Yes.
So it just didn't start my combat. There was more layers that were attached to that.
Yep.
My childhood, all of those things that I did, I repressed and I didn't want to think about. Those truths scared me because at the end of the day, I wanted to see that there was still some strength within me, you know, and with me throwing it on my back and just continuing to push through, I thought that was strength. But the truth was that was weakness because I was not going with what I felt was the appropriate thing. I didn't want to go past a certain limit. Yeah.
Well, because the lie had been told you because of what happened when you were a kid and what happened on the battlefield, you're a POS. And nobody cares about you anymore. And that murders your value.
Mm.
And what Jesus says, come to me, all you who are heavy burdened, and I will give you rest. It doesn't say I will give you a lesson. It doesn't say come to me, all you who are heavy burdened, and I will tell you you're wrong.
You know what the funniest thing?
He doesn't say that. He said, I'll give you rest. Mm. I'll give you rest. Psalm 23, he makes me lie down in green pastures. Makes me. Why? Because we need rest. We need rest. So how we take people to that truth, my theological persuasion is that I've never saved anybody. Mm. But y'all, I've seen a bunch of people come to Christ in front of me. The Holy Spirit works by himself. So my calling is to tell the truth and to love. Mm. That's it. And so I don't, you know, dude, I as a counselor, I read you when I met you.
Yeah.
Our boy too, down the street.
Yeah.
I saw things. It's not my right to say anything. It's your story. What I'm called to do is just respect you when we're around and care. And so the lies are what murder, and people are in a murdered state constantly. They stay in that. We've been on crime scenes before, right? You've seen things. It's hideous. It's heinous. You can't unsee it. Somebody was alive and now they're dead, and your mind, the first time you see it, you can't wrap your brain around it. And this is what's happening spiritually and emotionally to people. They're being murdered, and so they're helpless. What truth does is it brings in life, like our kids. Your precious little one coming out with a smile on her face. My daughter's texting me during the day, Daddy, we love you. Hope you're doing well. Life, my wife, and us having a conversation last night. Not the TV on, just a conversation. Life. We give people in trauma and hard situations just life, and we're asking them to join us in a community. Because community changes everything.
Oh, yeah, it does.
And that's what you guys are building right here. You're building a community of safety. And it's like, I grew up in the country. And so every now and then you'd have a stray dog show up on the property, right? Mm. Mm. What that dog's had the hell beat out of it all its life, it's going to stay about 70 feet back.
Yeah.
You can't say, come here, dog. Dog's like, no way I'm coming there. Right. You're going to kill me. You're going to beat me. But if you wait, the next day when you're working in the field, dog's a little closer. Because the dog is hungry.
It's
hungry for affection, for food, for care, for community. Dogs like to run in packs. They don't want to be by themselves. Yeah. They want to recognize an alpha. Mm-hmm. Okay. Our souls need an alpha. Mm-hmm. And so the dog will finally come in. And my experience, those stray dogs are the best dog ever have.
Yes.
Because now they're in, they're like, I'm going to protect you with my life.
They're loyal.
They're loyal because they've had nothing and now they have something and the value is way higher. Mm. So what we're saying to people in trauma, like, hey, when you're ready, I love to hang out. And I tell people all the time, no agenda. Yeah. I'm not going to tell you anything. Let's just go get a beer. Mm-hmm. Let's just go hang a little bit. You know, I want to hear your story.
And that's a big thing. Creating community in a way of love, of non-judgment. I think that is the
zero
big
judgment.
Zero judgment. Zero. I think we touched that a little bit. One of the reasons why I was able to, when I worked at the prison, to able to like connect with the prisoners was because I left my judgment at the door, and I was able to communicate with them in a human aspect.
They've been
talked to like inmates the whole time. Yeah, they've been talked to like inmates the whole time that they've been there or whatever. So yes, I know you've done something wrong, but let me just close this door. Let's talk for a little bit about this other crime you created, you know, and then we'll see where it goes. But leaving the non-judgment, not judging them for what they've done, opens up communication.
Bro.
So creating a community with no judgment and just allowing them to be present or being present with them just to talk.
Have you noticed that's why Karens are on the rise? Telling you, judgment, man. Just like cancel culture. Rah.
I have a buddy in the valley named James Belleville. When he started coming to church, he's tattooed up. He's a motorcycle guy. And he also has one of the sweetest hearts I've ever met in my life. But the Lord was just calling him. So he would come late and leave early. But he would come and I would see him in the back. And so we'd stand up to sing the last song. He'd be out the door because he didn't want to get close, but something was in him. He now leads a church in the valley.
Wow.
And
wow.
He works with men and he disciples dudes. So what we're saying to them is we don't, as believers or as cops or counselors or first responders, we don't say there's not a need for change. We just wait until they know it.
Yeah.
And so when somebody goes to somebody, they're going to test you a little bit, right? They're going to say, well, I did this. And if your response is like, the hell is wrong with you? Stop that. Bad person. Well, they're gone. And I would never trust somebody to do that to me. Yeah. But I've had counselors I go see. When I tell them something, I'm testing them. And when their response is, hey, I hear you on that. How you doing? Now they're telling me they're on my side. They're not against me. They're for me. That makes me want to talk about a little bit more. Yeah. And that's where help comes from. So in a community, the reason why I love jiu-jitsu communities, you can go worldwide and roll anywhere. When I was in Brazil, I rolled down there. I've rolled all across the United States, quite a few places. I was a part of Ohana here in San Antonio, a great family to where they just care for each other and everybody teaches everybody. So this is where the church, to come back to your question, is blowing it. They're saying Sunday, the 1 hour. That's like saying, we're going to spend 1 hour a week with our family. Well, kids, that's enough. I've spent an hour with you. I'll see you next Sunday. And that'd be crazy, right?
Yeah. So
the church is called to be a community. And we have to think about it like a giant hospital, not a giant hotel. Mm. We're not a giant coliseum. People are coming because they're in pain. Not a party. And at the same time, listen, the church is we're sheepdogs. Mm-hmm. I've told guys before, I had a guy come to my church in the valley and say, hey, I feel like I'm called to teach. This was a vet. Dude, he's like a 62-year-old dude, an 8-pack still. Like, he was a beast.
Yeah.
And I said, how about you put up chairs first? He's like, what, you don't trust me? I said, no. I don't know you. Trust has to be earned.
Yeah.
And so real people that are hungry, they're ready to, they're fine to set up chairs.
Yeah.
They're fine to sit at the lowest place on the table.
Yeah.
People that have an agenda come in and demand things.
Mm.
And the church demands things at the door now.
Yeah.
Hey, if you're going to come in here, dress a certain way.
Yeah.
Like, I know you're wearing, like, you know, the tank top and whatnot today, but next week, let's straighten up. Hey, I know your language is a little salty, but let's straighten that up. These are the rules that we put on top of the precepts of God, which are hard enough. Like, the Bible's hard enough to obey.
Yeah.
I don't need any extra rules.
Yes.
So when we planted a church, my thought was, and I'd come from very conservative, like, I'm not sure I want to plant a church for them. I want to plant a church for people that are on the fringe, that are on outside.
Yeah.
So we planted and people started coming and we would have drug dealers come. We would have dirty cops come. We would have people in the adult film industry. Like, we just had, and from that, beauty came from ashes, dude.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody was polished, but you saw real change.
Yeah.
You saw real frickin' change. Yeah. And now they're leaders. They've gone on to go to other places.
And you'll it's see easy them grow people out of these phases.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the crazies come in and they, they don't, they've never been a part of church before. I would ask questions when I was preaching, like, and in John chapter 3, it says this, do you guys know what I mean? And, you know, Jaime on the third row would be like, yeah, I know what you mean, Pastor Tom. Like, talking back to me?
Word.
I've never been in church before. You know, so it's a harder pathway.
Yeah.
But like the community you guys are building here, it's the road less traveled.
Well, it's raw, it's real, exposed, and it's a place for healing. And we treat this like a hospital.
Yes.
But we're all patients.
Yeah.
Here.
Me too.
Like, we're all I mean, there's different levels,
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I don't think we've ever said on here that we are healed because it's a continuous it's a continuous battle.
I mean, I'm a therapist and I'm still not healed.
Me too. I'm a pastor and I'm not healed.
Yeah.
And that's the thing though, being open about that, being open about that's truth.
And I
think in many ways, once you allow people to being vulnerable with people, that's a big thing. Being vulnerable and being authentic and genuine in what you're telling them, that in many ways breaks down those walls. So exactly what I was telling you earlier about the way that I was with my wife is I was so distant away from her when I was putting myself in a position where I had several walls, not just doors. I had walls.
Yeah.
And I didn't want her to get to the person that was at the end of all of those walls, who was a child just crying, just wanting to get fixed wanting to be loved. And that is the thing that you have to understand when you're going through all these things and you're in isolation and all of this and you've been told that, and then you try to reach out to these churches and then all of a sudden they're like, hey, no, you got to straighten up in this. All you do is what? You put up another wall.
It makes me want to fight people.
Here I go to this church who's supposed to have the answers to make me fix myself.
Yeah.
And now they're just setting more rules for me.
Yes.
And all of a sudden now it becomes, well, I guess I just put up another wall. I have no way of getting fixed.
Expectations and resentments, right?
Yes.
So you set an expectation that no one agreed to in the first place.
Nope.
And then you start to have a resentment if it's not met.
Yes.
And I think it goes both ways. And I think it goes all ways. And I think that we could do a better job as humans just to be human, right? Yeah. Just listen. People just want to be heard.
That's number
ask
one
questions
thing.
Questions and listen.
Yeah.
That's the number one thing.
That's getting the first door open right there.
Yeah. And you know what is crazy is we talked about this a lot. A lot of the time when people actually come on here, sometimes they don't want to come on here. They're just like, man, I don't know if I can be able to talk and blah, blah, blah. We have an hour conversation here. And at the end of it, they're like, I had so much more to say.
It's cathartic. Yeah.
You know what
it
I'm saying?
It opens up your soul, man.
And the thing about it is being genuine, being non-judgmental, allowing them to speak.
Yes.
And then at the same time, being authentic and being genuine about what you've actually gone through and shine light of your past as well into it shows them that, hey, I am not alone in this. There's other people here that have gone through the same thing that I have gone through.
Community.
And what they're doing now, they're sharing their story way more.
Yes.
To more people.
Yeah, like, it opens up a floodgate.
They're starting, I mean, like, we've had people go back to school. Like, oh my gosh.
It's so amazing,
such life-changing decisions come out of that one decision to just
speak up,
speak.
And that, that's the beautiful thing. That's the beautiful thing about this is that I think in many ways, a lot of people are just searching to find themselves and searching for somebody to actually show them that the pain that they've gone through.
It's
not just their pain, but other people have felt that. And, you know, there is a light at the end of that tunnel. And I think that's what you're talking about with this truth sets you free, basically. I mean, as much, as much as it might sound a little weird, but it's the truth, man. The truth sets you free from all of the things, all of the lies that you've been told all your life. The truth sets you free of that.
Yes, dude, it does. So you probably have been. Have y'all been to the Autobahn in Germany?
No.
I've only heard things about it. So, you know, I'm not a fast, I'm a truck guy and a horse guy. I should not be on a motorcycle or a very fast car. But I have friends that like to drive incredibly fast. And they're like, I've been on the Autobahn before, driving 140 miles an hour, and a Porsche will pass me at 180, 190. The reason is because that's what the Porsche was made for. The Porsche was not made for 55 miles an hour. It actually feels different. It feels better at 150, 160. And so if we, and you have to do the work on this, you really, and I tell guys all the time, listen, don't believe what I say. Like, you go home tonight when you're by yourself and say, God, if you are real, and this is a very ballsy prayer, God, if you're real, show me. Mm. And I've had hardcore drug dealers go, I'm not going to do that because I'm afraid of what he'll say.
Right. But he'll tell me no.
Yeah.
That's the biggest thing. Like, and okay, so I have a problem with rules sometimes.
Yeah.
Sometimes. And it's like, well, I'm afraid he's going to tell me no. That I can't live my life and that I have to quit this and this and this and I don't want to give up this and this because this is my whoopee. This is my trauma bond. This is my this is my sin that is haunting me throughout my life that feels comfortable. It feels normal. It feels safe and you're taking it away from me.
You're comfortable in your addiction. You don't understand it.
Yeah. Until you find that what is on the other side is much better. There's this illustration of like God with a little teddy bear. Or you with a little teddy bear and then God with a big teddy bear behind his back, but you have to give up the little teddy bear to get the big teddy bear, but you don't know what's behind the door. So it's like, I don't want to. And so it's like, but this is my teddy bear. But he's like, but I've got such a big surprise for you at this end. And it's better and it's healing and it's love. And it's the love that you've been looking for, by the way. So just open the door and quit being stubborn and just listen to me and you'll learn so much more and heal so much more people on the platforms that I have.
I love it. It's the logistics of care, but there's levels to everything. So if, you know, Antonio, you were teaching me how to run a marathon or something and we went out running the first day and you noticed that I was struggling, you're not going to push me past a certain amount. But if you and I start running together, we're in community and we're running 5-6 months. You see me being lazy. That's a point where like, Weaver, get off your butt. Let's go. You had the tools to do this. And so for me, it's never the first meeting to tell men, you need to do this, this, and this. But when you're in community for a while and you've broke bread with them and you've cried with them and you've laughed with them, they will ask you like, hey, I'm struggling in my marriage. That's when you say, can I help you? Not can I tell you? Can I help you? Yeah. This is what my wife and I have learned. My wife and I go to family counseling, marriage counseling every week, and we have a great marriage. But I want to learn more because I'm called to help and serve. Therefore, I must be helped and served. So this is, religion says this. If you be a good boy or girl, if you watch your language, if you go to church, if you tithe, then God may love you. All right? What the gospel says, and that word is euangelion, and I got it as a tattoo. Gospel is good news. What the gospel says is before you were ever born, God chose to love you. And he is outside of time, space, continuum. And he knew exactly what you were going to do when he decided to love you. So God is already loving you. Now you are free to love him. You know what I'm saying? This is why I follow Christ now. Because my kids, when Selena was pregnant with our first Carolina, I already loved her, right? Like, I remember in utero, we loved these. One, because they're life at the very beginning. They are a person from the very, God said he knits us together in our mother's womb. Okay. So I was already telling Carolina, I loved her when she was a bean. Yeah. And then when she was a little softball, I love you, honey. I love you, honey. And she came out. I love you. I love you. I love you. She didn't tell me she loved me. I woo-woo like one and a half, you know, and she, you know, she was saying, she was parroting it back.
Yeah.
But now she loves me. How much more so the love of a holy God for his people? He's not waiting for us to do something bad. He's waiting for us to recognize his incredible love, the big teddy bear.
Yeah.
Like, I have something bigger for you right now.
You know,
that's good news.
You know, and I man, you touched on something right now that it really touches me. One of the things that I have always been astonished with is the way my kids love me.
Mm.
It even though as much as, you know, they've been through everything, through when I had my severe PTSD, going through counseling, all the medications and everything like that, my oldest and my middle, they went through, they saw me at my worst.
Yeah.
But they never stopped loving me.
No.
And I can attest that as what I'm trying to say is like, God's love is child love. They just love you. Mm. It doesn't matter what you've done or anything like that. You can be a criminal. You could have even been a child, a parent who abuses their, but your kids are still going to love you and I still want to be near you. So in many ways, it is like that. It's like God's love is like child love.
Well, it's pure love.
Yeah.
And the younger you take a child, the more pure. Like, we get a classroom of 5-year-olds right now. If I were to say, how many of y'all want to sing a song? All 25-year-olds would be like, yeah! And even Jimmy can't sing and Susie is tone deaf, they all sing. But you get that same group in a crew when they're 19 and you say, how many of y'all want to sing? No, I'm not a music major. I can't sing. See, they've been beat down.
Yes.
And told they can't worship, they can't sing.
Yeah,
you're not a good athlete, Billy. You don't run like the other boys. This is the tampering of the soul.
Mm.
And what God is saying, like, hey, listen, maybe you can't do everything you want to do, but you can do a lot more than you realize.
Mm.
And I'm not going to leave you. So that's super pure love. And that's how kids, in counselor, you can attest to this. Kids want to forgive, right? They want
and they
to
love
forgive
more if... The more you're honest with them.
Wow.
So like with my kids, a lot of people don't know this, but during season one, I was going through a divorce on this show and dealing with a lot of things, wow, plus an abusive relationship after that. And as we were going through it, this, I was still expected to look a certain way and to act a certain way and to show up. And mentally, I just was struggling. It was a huge depressive state.
Yes.
And my kids will always be the ones to be like, it's okay, mommy. Like, it's okay. Like, you're okay. And because I showed them that. And so they're parroting it back to me, but
yes,
we've built this bond to where I don't hide things from them. If I'm having a hard day, I might not show them everything,
yeah,
right? And like overindulge, right? But just say like, hey, mommy's having a hard day. You know, it's kind of rough for me. I'm kind of sad.
That's good.
So, hey, like, how about we, you know, cuddle on the movie and watch a couch tonight? Like, or, you know, kind of on the couch and watch a movie,
yeah,
together. And that way they know that you see them, that they're still important,
yes,
but you also have things that you're battling. And one day they're going to be battling the same things.
Yes. That is proper community. Because in a community, we have older and we have younger.
Mm-hmm.
If you have the same age in one community, like, we're starting to have 50 and 60 year olds come to our church, but the average age has been 32. And if you only have 32 year olds, like trying to herd cats, it's just one mindset.
Yeah.
You need younger, you need middle age, you need older, you need those that have been through hard times, you need poor, you need rich, you need married, single, you need all different colors. That's what heaven's going to look like. And you teaching your kids, you're telling them they're going to be where you are right now.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're teaching them. My father was a pastor. My mother was actually a very, very good woman. And I never heard either one of them ever say, I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm.
Church leaders, never heard them say, I'm sorry one time, which meant to me as a kid, I have to say I'm sorry all the time, but y'all don't. So evidently I'm the problem and you're not. I read the word bastard one time on the bathroom stall. I learned how to read very young. I was like, Mom, what does bastard mean? I thought she's going to run off the road. She said, oh, Tommy, we don't say that. That's a bad word. And I thought, oh, that must be bad for saying it.
So
our kids right now, whatever words they bring home, we repeat back. So if they read damn on it, Daddy, what does damn mean? Oh, you saw the word damn today? Here's what it means. Words don't have power. The heart does.
Have you ever heard like, oh, because I said so. Have you ever like logically thought through some of these responses that we tell our kids? Parenting. But we tell our kids because we heard it from our parents and from the parents around us. And so it becomes like this normal like narrative. But that's half of the trauma work is to figure out the words associated plus the meaning and then tie them together into what you're actually really trying to convey.
And you're taking that paradigm and then we're transferring it to God. Mm. We're saying, well, this is how we act with our kids. Obviously, this is how you act to us. You know, I wore my kid out yesterday. You probably want to wear me out right now. I gave, and parents do this, give your kid the silent treatment over something they've done for a day. Well, God, because I just messed up and did this stupid thing, you're probably not going to talk to me for 3 days.
That's the
brokenness. And that's where transferring to a perfect being. Mm-hmm. And it's called immutable attributes, like something you cannot remove. God's love for you vets out there, God's love for us in this room is 100% of what it will always be. So I mess up tomorrow. I say something stupid. I get self-righteous. I get in a fight at Walmart, whatever. God's love in that moment does not lessen for me. It is still 100%. He is above and beyond. We're human. We have flesh. God is a spirit, doesn't have a body like men. And he's perfect. And so we can trust in that love. And when people that know that love are in a community, it's very attractive to those that are looking. If you're a part of a religious community, you will attract religious people. You will attract Pharisees and hypocrites and liars and people that know how to keep a front on a broken house. Mm. But man, if you live open, like our elders at our church, if they ask me, PT, how are you doing today? If I'm not good, I tell them, I'm a little bit of a tiff with Selena right now. And I kind of got ticked in traffic today because this guy cut me off. Mm. And I'm angry at the IRS or whatever. First few times I said that, their response was like, because what are we conditioned to say? How are y'all doing
today?
I'm good. We're good. Everybody's good.
Yeah. Enter in imposter syndrome.
Yes.
And this is why that's on the rise.
Yeah.
Because that's exactly what that is.
That's that community. Mm-hmm. And I was a part of that community for a long time. And it wore me the crap out. Yeah. I like being in this community with broken people.
Yeah.
Because the broken people are looking to serve and care for one another. Because we're open and honest about our crap. And real healing, change happens in a broken community. Very little gets fixed in a lie community. Because it's murdering that process.
Yeah.
It's not giving it life. Confession and repentance saying, I suck at marriage right now. I'm really struggling in my marriage. I am not a good dad. Somebody help me. This community is like, we're here for you. I've been there.
I use the analogy of a garden, right? So you have a very pretty fence surrounding a bunch of weeds. It looks great from the outside looking in. It's a pretty fence.
Yes.
But you don't know what's on the other side.
You don't know.
And with the garden that we have a broke fence, like real crappy, but our garden is blooming and it's beautiful and it's growing and it's diverse. And there's so many different things growing all at once. And we're living in harmony and trying to keep the vermin out, you know?
Yeah. Together.
Together. Yeah.
And so I'll give you this one last analogy. When I was a non-Christian, I would run like in a pack with my friends. And what would we do together? We're going to go raise some hell. Yep. And we're going to look to hook up and get drunk and get high and hopefully not get arrested. And it did happen. And so, but it was one for all and all for one. Yeah. And our relationship was about a thimble deep. Mm-hmm. But we were mobbed up all the time. And then I come to Christ and I felt like I was supposed to be by myself. Mm. And numbers matter. So numbers matter back in the day when somebody wanted to throw down. Numbers also matter as a believer. We feel like it's onward, lonely Christian soldier. No, we need numbers now. So the big tough guys, I think of one, I'll call him Jim. Jim was a collector for the cartel. He was a giant Mexican dude. Like, I don't know. He was huge. He's like 6'2", big shoulders. He was a freaking collector for the cartel. Like, that's a bad man.
Yeah.
I shared the gospel with him and he came to Christ and I baptized him. And he was so big, like I had to push him down in the water. He's a big dude. And he came up to me the next week when I was starting to preach. And all the druggie guys would do this. They'd be like, Pastor Tom. They always look around. I got your back if anybody rushes the stage. I'm like, do you know something I don't? Yeah.
Taking me out?
Our church, all the army, all the military guys and the drug dealers and cartel would sit wide. Yeah. Because they wanted to see everybody coming in. Yeah. I told Jim when he was accepting Christ, like, look, here's the deal. You're a big, strong man, but I could bring in 25 fifth graders to take you down right now. Mm-hmm. And he went. I said, you may take out the first 10, but the next 5 are going to grab your legs. And the next 5 are going to grab your face and they're going to whip your tail. Mm-hmm. And he started laughing. He was like, you're totally right. He'd been in fights all his life. Yeah. Numbers matter. Mm-hmm. When the DEA shows up at your house, it's not one guy at the front door. There's 25 agents behind your house. Yeah. There's a helo on you and there's 10 agents with shotguns at the front door. That's numbers matter.
Dispatch.
So when I hear guys in this, they start to come in our community. They say things like, I have my own faith and I do this by myself. The bottom line is whatever you do in a healthy community, you'll grow faster, you'll grow quicker, and you'll be more adept at handling issues. Mm-hmm. So if I want to learn how to shoot, I can shoot by myself. But if I go in with pros, my knowledge, I just went with an instructor like 2 months ago.
And you do it the right time the first time. So that's why I went into coaching and that's I hire so a coach is because they know something that you don't.
Yes. And you
that
learn.
You learn faster. You learn more efficient.
In community.
And you don't have to struggle.
You don't have to make alone. The same mistakes. So that should be what the church is. Mm-hmm. Is a place where people can come and be and not be judged. And this the scripture will speak to them.
Yeah.
Your lifestyle will. I used to have guys over at our house in the valley and a bunch of dudes would be in our kitchen, guys I was discipling. They would see me start washing the dishes and they're like, what are you doing, PT? Come washing the dishes. Why? Doesn't your wife? No, we all wash dishes here. We're a community. Mm-hmm. All right, guys, give me 10 minutes. I got to go put the girls to bed. I'd go in, they'd come back. They're like, what did you just do? Well, I sang with them, read a story, prayed and put them to bed. Mm-hmm. You do that a lot? Yeah. We co-parent here. And I'm the leader of the house.
But a lot of people don't know what that is.
We do this together.
They've never shown. Yeah. They were
because
never
shown. Their dads never did it. Yeah. Their dads taught them how to get drunk and to hire a prostitute.
Yep.
So the community of brokenness is always one of wanting to learn.
Yeah.
And so we not only meet them in that space, we also protect them from others. I'll tell people to leave. Mm. If I see any type of danger, I've told a guy before he came in, he started looking at the women. And I come from sexual sin. And I took him in a back room with another pastor and said, hey, bro, if you're struggling with sexual sin, if you're looking to hook up here, it's not going to happen. Mm-hmm. And he made all kinds of excuses. I said, no, seriously, like we protect our ladies here. Mm-hmm. And he left and he never came back. So we're not only sheepdogs to protect the wolves from coming in, we're caregivers for the ones that have come in.
Yeah.
And that's how community builds itself. That's what's attractive.
That's beautiful, brother.
Yeah, man.
So, if you had advice or just something motivational to say for people who are struggling right now or maybe are trying to find Christ, what would you say?
Man, I would say tonight, ask God, God, if you are who you say you are, reveal yourself to me and begin to look for people that are looking for the same things. I listen to scripture every day in my car when I drive because it's the story of God and I want to know more about God's story. I'll be listening to scripture probably on the way home after this interview. And I found that the more I know about him, the more I'm interested in him and I'm drawn to him. You know, you and I just started getting to know each other.
Yeah.
There's more layers in me and you and us that we can get to know each other. And that's how you get bonded up. My wife, Selena, we've been married 22 years this year. I know more about her now than I did 10 years ago. By God's grace, hopefully I'll know more about her in 10 years than I do right now. It's an ongoing relationship. So be willing to go to a community maybe that won't judge you. Don't trust any pastor that won't talk about his own sin. And allow the good news of Christ maybe to draw you in.
Amazing. It's
beautiful.
And for those of you that are loving others, no judgment, like you guys said, you're honest. It doesn't mean we don't have morals. It just means that you're not a part of the Trinity. And that I'm called to love and care people where they are. And when they ask you the tough questions, you got to be ready for that. You know, so if I'm eating Snicker bars every day and I'm like, Antonio, I don't know why I won't lose weight.
You may not want to tell me that the first day, but a month later, you're going to stop eating sugar, dummy.
He might tell you the first day. He might just be like, stop eating Snickers.
Oh, well, brother, thank you so much for coming on and sharing your story with us.
Where can people find you?
MissionChurchSA.org. Awesome. MissionChurchSA.org. And you can wear chanclas, which are flip-flops, shorts, tank top, and come in drinking a Red Bull or your hat on backwards. Just come hang out with us.
Awesome. Well, thank you for that, buddy.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.